Welcome to the Ideas Podcast, the show where learning professionals discuss their big ideas for the learning and development industry. In this episode, we catch up with Lauren Walden, aka the Learning Pirate. Hey Lauren, thanks so much for taking the time out to come and talk to us about your big ideas for the learning industry. As everyone who tunes in knows, I am awful at introducing people. I will mispronounce people's names, forget what job they do, and generally make a fool of myself. So I'm going to hand things straight over to you. Who are you and why should we listen?
Oh, see, the pirate in me now wants to hand it back over to you, but I won't do that to you. Hi, everyone. I'm Lauren Waldman. Most know me as the Learning Pirate, founder of Learning Pirate. I'm your resident brain nerd, cognitive neuroscience, everything about the brain, a scientific learning designer, a translator, and the girl who's got the coolest hair usually at the conference.
I can certainly approve of that. So some of you watching may recognize Lauren from both our IDTX conferences. So you've presented twice for those now, both very much loved sessions. I think the first one you did is on our IDT TV loop at the moment, because it's so popular. So thank you for doing that and sharing so much. I think that's one thing we can always count on whenever I go onto LinkedIn. You've got something to say that's worth listening to, which for LinkedIn is saying something, you know?
Well, they haven't kicked me off yet, so I think this is a good thing.
Excellent. So there are a couple of questions we always like to ask on this show. So the first one, of course, is going to be, what are you drinking today when you're relaxing at home, when you're working? What do you like to drink?
Okay, so I am off coffee. I'm caffeine cycling. Yes, this is a new thing for Lauren. I'm caffeine cycling. So I'm actually... I'm drinking a decaf mushroom elixir. So all of the reishi, the cordyceps, the chagas, all those really wonderful things that are great for your brain, I'm now onto that. And iced, because it is so hot here in Toronto right now.
It's funny, whenever I think Canada, I can't get my head around the idea that Canada has like hot weather.
Oh, yeah.
It seems crazy.
By the time we're done here today, my hair is just going to take up the whole... You won't be able to see me. Like, it's just, you'll just be able to hear my voice.
Well, if it doesn't happen naturally now, I'm going to have to edit that in. So thank you for that extra pressure on the editing front for this episode. So that's always a fun way. How you're going without caffeine, I don't know. I don't think I could manage. I usually get a couple of hours in the morning, but then I realize I've forgotten to have coffee and everything falls apart. But the important question, your big idea. What is your big idea for the learning and development world?
I feel like this is the most obvious answer ever, but obviously it's the brain. My big idea is bringing more of the brain into learning and development. And the fact that I even have to say that sounds absolutely ridiculous.
It does, but I mean, it's interesting. I know from previous chats, you've sort of asked people about when were you taught about learning and when were you taught about the brain? You've asked a lot of people these questions. The first time you asked me, I realized that actually... I think back to when I started going, right, I want to work in training, I want to work in learning and development, went on several big courses from big accredited organizations. Not once, not one conversation did we ever have about the brain, arguably the one more important thing that we should have been learning. We did, however, learn about learning styles and multiple intelligences and other such wonderful things.
Can I just close the screen now?
We learn better once we hit the real world, but it's interesting that we kind of focus on things like that rather than arguably much more useful stuff.
Well, like all joking aside, there is a very valid reason. I mean, even before I really got into my learning about the brain and neuroscience and got all the fancy credentials, one thing I learned as I was going through that process is the reason why it probably hasn't gotten into our education systems, plus, you know, the learning and development industry, is to be a credible and validated translator. It takes a lot of work, a lot of research, a lot of learning. And there's just not that many of us out there to translate that really complex research into the practical application of the work that we do. So we're catching up. we're definitely catching up.
And I think that's kind of seen in the industry. And I feel like now there are still not enough voices, but a growing number of voices willing to say, hang on a minute, this doesn't sound right.
There's a lot of that, yeah. Well, but we should be challenging it.
100%. But I feel like there's a slight, for a long time, there was a very, we were all very comfortable going, oh, well, neuroscience tells us. Because I'm going to go, does it? Because I guess there's a big, kind of mirroring what you just said, there's a problem around, I don't know enough to challenge that. If someone says, oh, there's been, neuroscience tells us this, I'm like, does it? I don't know. I suspect you don't know either. So why are you using that word? I think there's been a lot of that for a very long time. So it's great to have that kind of being combated. But I suppose from your perspective, let's start on a negative and then move massively uphill as we go forwards. What damage has that done to the L&D world? Because I think that's so often the pushback. Does it really matter? Like, if it works for me, then it's a good thing, right?
It does matter. It matters so much because I think that's why there has always been a perpetuation of myths like that, you know, the learning styles where we only use 10% of our brains, which is absolutely preposterous. But by people not doing their due diligence and trusting those who are using that, well, neuroscience says, have you checked that person's credentials? Have you seen, do they even have the authority to be speaking on these things? And if you do just that little bit of deep diving, I mean, anyone can go onto LinkedIn or anybody can Google anybody these days and find out, well, oh, wait, they don't have any credentials in this. They don't have any research backing in this, but we trust them. And I think that's a very big problem in the industry as a whole, is that we're too trusting of people who either gain massive popularity because of their job status or, you know, some pay to play. We know that too. But we need to do more due diligence, which is why my credentials are 1,000,000% out there. My certificates are listed. My certificate numbers are listed. My board of advisors are public. And I think for anyone who's listening, when you want to validate somebody's credentials to do good and to move forward in what we know, that's the way you need to do it. We've got to be a little bit more discerning.
Absolutely. And I always kind of wonder, like, we often, there's always a lot of inward talk in L&D about, oh, why aren't we taken seriously? Why don't we get a seat at the table? Why don't businesses respect us? And I wonder if it's because in the last decade, we've spouted so much nonsense about learning styles and multiple intelligences, 10% of the brain, all these things that we've kind of gone, oh, this is it. Mobile learning's the future. Gamification's the future. And all of it was just, we think, but without us saying that bit out loud. With no backup, we sort of spread nonsense and then go, why does no one respect us?
Well, haven't you just opened the Pandora's box that was already opened by everybody else in the industry? This is a very hot topic right now. And I think the reason it's, and I can't speak to what's happening over in the UK, I can definitely with certainty say in North America, almost on a weekly basis, whole teams are being made redundant in one swoop. One day, a whole team is gone. And it's L&D. So what is the issue? I mean, I've been in the industry for a very long time across multiple industries within L&D, multiple geographies. And everywhere I went, it's, we have a seat at the table, but we're not using our voices strong enough at it. It's not that we don't have a seat. We're in those meetings. We are in those meetings. But we haven't sort of been a little bit more forceful as we need to prove and to demonstrate to the business how valuable learning really is to all of the functions of sales, of marketing, of ops, of all the processes, of onboarding. It's all learning, change management, all of it. So it's a matter of what's going on there.
I think it's so interesting because I think there's, you kind of, is a big loop, I suppose, is not having that really solid understanding of the brain, of what learning really is, is probably that foundational piece that we're lacking to have the confidence to say, here's the value that we can provide, right?
A million percent. It's, you know, when I started the business, I had left my position as CLO. And this was, I think it was even before CLO was even a thing. I don't think that CLO wasn't an acronym when I left. But I was the head of learning for a massive global IT company. And I couldn't get done what I needed to get done. internally because there was always so much pushback. But when I started to, you know, understand learning much more thoroughly, you know, over the course of almost a decade now that I've been studying the brain, it's, we do understand, just like you, just like everyone I've asked myself, no one ever taught me how to learn. No one did. It's not that I don't know how to learn. We all know how to learn. We're designed. We're physically designed to. But when we understand what learning looks like from the inside out, then we understand why we can't fire hose people with information and content, why we can't just send them to a conference for 2 days and expect them to come back like magically endowed with all of the knowledge of all the things. It does not work that way. It's like biologically, chemically, neurochemically, it does not work that way. So at a very foundational level, you're absolutely right, is if we could get not just the L&D teams, it's not just the L&D teams who need to understand what is learning at a fundamental human level? How do I design better for that process? But also, we need to go out to the rest of the business and say, well, you guys don't know how to do it either because we don't know how to do it. Most of you. It has to be a harmonization between the two. The employee population has to learn how to learn with better strategy, more intention about, you know, not working against their brains, which most often we all do because we don't know about them. But it's also that coming to the table of, well, if I can design better learning from the L&D team and deliver and go through the process of doing an analysis with the business function, but then, oh my God, everybody actually knows how to absorb this more strategically, to transfer, to encode a memory, to create memory. Then we've got exceptional ROI.
Yeah, it's interesting because I always use it. It took me by surprise. I kind of left education, then came back to it later. And was surprised that like step one in higher education for me was, okay, so we did this whole 6 months on like the fundamentals of effective learning. and it was how you are going to learn for the next couple of years. And it's like, this feels like a waste of time. But the number of things that work in L&D, I went, huh, why don't we do this in the workplace? It was a real eye-opener. And a lot of it related to the fact that, you're right, so much of how we structure content, how we push things, the fact that we push content speaks for itself, right? It kind of goes against what everyone naturally will do if they're just allowed to learn or encouraged to learn. Mm-hmm. So I guess, sort of zooming in on that a little bit, what do you think some of the kind of key challenges and I guess opportunities on the flip side of that for L&D teams right now in terms of, you know, gaining this knowledge, sharing this knowledge, what should they be doing?
I mean, at this point, I feel like I'm speaking to leaders all around the world and, you know, just having these conversations, and it seems to be the same across, is that they're not given budget. Mm. And without a good budget to bring in, you know, people like myself or other translators who can start sharing this knowledge and getting it in there, you know, that's one of the major roadblocks. So I feel like this is just, everyone's going to know the answers here. It's time, it's money. It's time and it's money. That's always what the case is. However, the case for this is exceptional because when you look, everyone's like, well, what's the ROI? If I teach everybody how to learn better, if I teach them about their brains, well, what's the ROI on this? I'm like, well, let's see. How many times do you have to bring in another training vendor in order to redo the training that you did already? Okay, there's one. Number two, the employees. How often are you finding them searching for things that they were supposed to have learned from you, but now they're on Google, YouTube, TikTok, name any one of the social platforms. So how much time are they spending doing that? Okay, there's time that we get back. Then we've got the LMSs and the learning libraries. Okay. How often do you go just on your regular day, a Saturday night, you want to sit down and watch something on Netflix and it takes you, I don't know, 20 to 30 minutes just to find something that you want to watch? Well, this is what's happening with these massive libraries as well. Tons of time wasted. On the fundamental human level, though, what I think people really miss is that, yes, we want people to have, we want to give them the skills and the abilities to be able to learn better. But what we're talking about is teaching them about themselves as fundamental human beings. So we can underpin this with, you're going to learn the skill of learning more strategically and intentionally to save all that time and to tackle the learning in a way that you can put it into use much faster and more effectively. But you're also learning the fact that, oh, wait, a memory, a trace of memory, unless I absolutely terrify you or cause some crazy emotional scarring while we're learning, that's the only way that memory is stamped instantly. takes time to create. We're changing a human brain, and we need to allow for that process to happen. What if we gave everybody the abilities to focus? Focus is a skill. We forget this. Focus is a skill, and we can train the brain to do it through attentional networks, through, you know, all of these little practices, metacognitive abilities. Why would someone go into a learning intervention and then come out of it and go, ooh, I don't know anything, when we can design the learning for them to understand, oh, I actually don't know this in the moment, versus once you're already done, more time wasted. And I can go on and on. You want to talk about stimulating neurochemistry? Let's do it. You want to talk about, you know, working memory and cognitive load? Let's do it. Memory, sleep, emotions, behavioral sciences. I don't understand how this isn't more prevalent. Like I said, but beyond the fact that there aren't a lot of me out there to help get this in there, it shouldn't be such an uphill battle to make a case for this.
And I think that's certainly, from my perspective, that was a big part of the challenge in getting started in these areas. The fact that a lot of them are quite, if you don't have someone like yourself to kind of help guide you in, it's quite a big step from like practicing L&D to picking up your first like proper book on, you know, on brain chemistry or on behavioral psychology. It's, you know, you kind of, for, the way I always used to put it was, I need to find a smart person to help me understand the big words. Like, it's, if you, you know, I know where to put the button on screen for best effect, but anything beyond that, I kind of need someone to help me on to that next step. Because realistically, I always consider myself as, regardless of what else I do, I'm an instructional designer. I might be a manager at various points, I might be doing different things, but broadly speaking, I'm an instructional designer by trade. I'm never, therefore, going to have the pinnacle of knowledge of any of these other things, because it's not my specialty, right? And I think so often we confuse needing an understanding with, you must have, you know, the understanding, you must completely re-specialize. And that's kind of not what you're saying, right?
No. And as a matter of fact, don't do it. It's taken me a decade. And anyone who's seen one of my keynotes, I show, and in the series as well, you get to see these horrific photos of me where, like, my hair is like legitimately, like, you know, it's like there could be an animal living in it, and, you know, coffee stained shirts, and I'm crying because it was so hard to learn about the brain, because I never knew anything about it, which was like so embarrassing to admit as a former teacher and a learning professional. I'm like, how do I not know about this thing doing all the work? But the complexity of it is real. It is really real. And I went so deep down that rabbit hole, and it was for professional and for personal reasons. People who have heard me speak, they know that there was a personal reason. It was because of my grandmother, who was, you know, she was old and she was going through dementia. The hospital that she was at, they gave me privileges. They let me attend rounds. They brought me into their fold to show me their world. And that's how I was, you know, donned, or, you know, knighted, if you will, a scientist later, you know, years later. I was honored with the title of becoming a learning scientist. But don't go down the same rabbit holes that I did. It will drive you crazy, and you do have to dedicate. I stopped my learning career for a solid 2 to 3 years. I'm still working, but it takes that type of dedication to understand not only the science itself, but I had to learn how to be a better researcher. I had to learn how to learn, because that was the first thing that I realized. I'm like, holy moly, I don't know how to do this properly. It shouldn't have been. Now, learning needs to be hard. It should be hard. No scientist I know will tell you it's supposed to be easy. But the reason why I wanted to come back into our industry, because I'm a learning designer too. That's my jam. I just do it with science now, which is so cool. But I wanted to come back into the industry to go, oh my God, you guys, you need to know this. Holy moly. But don't go as far deep as I did. Let me do the heavy lifting for you. I'll give you all the golden nuggets.
And this is, it's interesting that in so many ways mirrors what we do in it, what an instructional designer is supposed to do for our learners. We don't take everything the SME gives us and chuck it at the learner. No, we pick out the bits that are highly relevant and actionable, and we give them to them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it shouldn't be that hard to get our heads around, but I think we've got a a nasty tendency of going, best practice for you, but I'll just do whatever. It's fine. Don't worry. Often because there's no SME waiting to call us out when we get it wrong. Because we're often the experts in our business, even if we have no clue what we're doing. Not that that's ever been my position before. That was early moments in my career, still flashback where I was like, oh yeah, I'm sure this is what we should be doing. I look back and go, what are you, why did someone not stop me? This was obviously a stupid idea. But I suppose that's the thing, is that you can't expect colleagues to be able to stop you and challenge you if this knowledge is not generally held.
Right. But I mean, you know, when we first started this conversation, so the two years that I've done IDTX, right? And the amount of feedback afterwards that people are like, oh my God, so I tried this and it worked there. And I tried this in my team meeting and that worked there. And it changed my design like this. I'm like, yes. I'm like, yeah.
I think that's what surprised me is so often when I've gone, oh, I need to adopt that. I need to use that. I've maybe seen very slight changes in how I work or slight improvements in things. When I took the sort of the core things out of those sessions and went, okay, I'll try that. It was instant result. It was instant change. Things that had taken, you know, 6 months to land were now taking a month to land. It had a real tangible and immediate impact. And that's it's quite rare, especially in our world, to see that bigger swing. But also it kind of shows the level of impact this stuff has is far greater than we spend a lot of time talking about how, oh, L&D needs to be more like marketing, L&D needs to be more like product. I'm guilty of that as much as anyone else, because they are easier to achieve. let's be honest. Pretty pictures and well-placed buttons and structured flows is much easier than fundamentally getting to grips with how people learn.
So I think
the impact it has is huge. And I'm wondering actually where you've gone and implemented these things. What kind of changes have you seen?
Ooh, I think I'll give you sort of two sort of studies. Unfortunately, I won't be able to name the companies. I'm under strict NDAs, but one is a very large global consulting company, and I worked with their team, and we did three sessions. It was a 2.5-3 hour workshops, and we scaffolded on the knowledge, but we do this one and okay, I'll see you tomorrow. We're going to do the next one. No, we use the science to build out. And this was their designers. It was their facilitators, and it was some people from their ops and tech team. And it didn't matter who was in that room because everyone was going to get the same knowledge, but they'd be able to contextualize it into their roles differently. The coolest thing that happened was one of the designers back-channeled me on LinkedIn, and she was so in it with this project, but because of what she had figured out when we were together, she was so hungry to understand, okay, wait, I'm trying to do this thing and I'm trying to insert this emotional reactivity that you were talking about, but I know that there's a threshold. How can I do this so that I don't cross that? I was like, oh my God. It's because it went beyond what happened in that session, because when you know these things, and I think that's why I'm so adamant and passionate about these, you can't unknow it. You cannot unknow it. Once you know that, wait a second, I can trigger something on a screen or through a narrative or with a color, and I can draw the brain's attention to focus on that thing if it's designed properly, to help the person on the other side of that screen to trigger their brain. I'm like, that's what it's all about. So the wins that we get is we've got L&D designers, or instructional designers, their ability to design for a brain, not for content, not for time, for a brain, go up significantly. And like you said that you've experienced, we see the transfer then become a lot higher, because we are cutting out all the noise and we are really working with what we know to increase the design efficacy. Those are some of the biggest wins from the design teams that I've made, is their ability to now understand the same way that I design, which is I understand that there's a person on the other side of that, but I'm looking past the matrix and into the brain. And they're able to do that now.
That's very cool. I guess we're at that point where I need to ask about how people can actually do this. I think we're all pretty sold on the value of this stuff. But and I've got a bit of a story for this. There was a book that came out a long time ago. It's The Neuroscience of Learning. And I bought it fairly early on, and I sat down and I made it about 10 pages in, and kind of went, onto the shelf. And on the shelf, it still sits to this day, because I just couldn't bring myself to work through it. It was my first experience of ever reading a scientific reference. Yeah. I had not gone back to education, so it's a bit kind of like a, don't understand this. And that killed that for a very long time for me. So I think it's fair to say that's probably, for most people, some people are smarter than me and you'll pick it up and you'll be like, yeah, this is easy, Tom's an idiot. But that's okay. But it wasn't for me. Yeah. So what is there out there to help us with this?
Well, Tom, I might... joining forces with your brain. The symphony that I created for this purpose. If I wasn't able to get this directly into the organizations, I could definitely bring it. This was something that I designed for the general public. My L&D homies are just cramming this. They love it so hard. But the series, so this is a online learning series. I don't like calling it a course. I think a course is a dirty word in my world. This is a very intentionally, scientifically designed journey to help people understand the function of their brain while we're also learning about learning. Now, you've seen it. You know, mm-hmm. this is not your standard.
Do you know what? I get what you mean about the course, just to kind of cut in, because I think so many people who... A lot of people online, shockingly, are flogging courses because it was the number one piece of advice in L&D not so long ago, wasn't it? We'll all have passive incomes of £1 million a year by flogging online courses. It's great. Nonsense, of course, but they were just very bog standard. Now complete this. Now watch this video. Now fill out this worksheet and upload your results. It was a course in the truest 1998 style that we just put onto the internet. The thing I kind of noticed when I was going through this is you genuinely, it just felt like watching more like almost like a web series. It had that relaxed kind of, oh yeah, I think I will do another one. Or actually, do you know what? I'm going to walk away for a little bit and come back after dinner or whatever it might be. It had that really nice flow to it that just made it almost, it just didn't feel like I'm doing learning. I was more just, it was something else, which is quite nice.
Well, you know, for the kajillion times, and I say this, I think in the first or the second video, I've been asked to write a book so many times. I said, no, you write the book. I am going to give you everything that you need throughout this amazing journey, and I'm going to facilitate it, right? So this is a very, as you've experienced, I'm facilitating in a way that's probably never been facilitated on video before, because I'm almost like talking to you as if I'm with you. It's like, hey, Tom, stop what you're doing right now. I told you to stop. Did you stop? I know you didn't. So pause me. Okay. But it was, again, everything is designed so incredibly intentionally and strategically, because why would I write a book like that? It was just going to wind up on your shelf, right? Books need to be learning tools, and this is a journey, and this isn't just a journey about you learning how to learn better and learning, you know, my designers, they are picking it up. They are understanding how to transfer this into their professional lives. But this is your journey about learning about your own brain and your learning strategies. So this is, the journals are hopefully going to be, made and out by next year, but no, this is something that goes way beyond, click here. Click there. Oh, okay. I'll just Amazon shop while I go through this really, really amazing e-learning.
Sounds about right.
And plus, I'm like a prankster. You know that. There's so much unexpected that, I think someone once referred to it as like, it's part learning, part Netflix, part Johnny Knoxville Jackass. And I was like, okay.
That's about right.
I don't know what the UK equivalent is of that, but...
Yeah, no, I suppose, yeah, that's, I suppose here that's probably not as current. It was there when I was a kid. That was on telly. That was fine. That was, we had that.
I'm not
I don't
old.
Think there is an equivalent. I don't think there is an equivalent now, though. I'm fairly certain enough laws kind of went, this is a really bad idea. Like,
Maybe it's more Mr. Beanish. Let's just go with that.
There we go. That'll resonate with that, especially with a UK audience. We do like our Mr. Bean.
I mean, I don't want to run around with a turkey on my head, but you never know. There's still more chapters to be designed.
There we go. So you do that, you'll have plenty of people tuning in. And this is why it's important to always put a turkey on your head when facilitating learning.
Novelty. The brain loves it.
Oh, fantastic. So obviously, we'll put links to Joining Forces Your Brain down in the comments, and I can't recommend it highly enough. And those who watch the channel will know how weird that is. I don't recommend online learning stuff very often. In fact, this is pretty much the only one, because we talked about it on the ID update last month, I want to say, as well. Because we were asking, like, what, you know, I say I'm lightly critical, but that would be a lie, of a lot of the online learning stuff aimed at the L&D people, because usually it's just other L&D people trying to rip you off for a couple of grand for very little value. This is not that. This is genuinely valuable to you. So well worth a look.
I think I actually ripped myself off on this one.
Yes, this is it. I think that was one of the things I wanted to touch on. It was that idea that it's very clearly deliberately aimed at that space where it is accessible to everyone. It's not another one of these things where, like I said, when I started in the industry, I did some real big expensive courses that basically pointed me in the wrong direction and said, go be terrible at your job. But they had a big fancy name attached to them. They had a big price tag, so they must be good, right? And it put me off for the rest of my career paying for courses, because I was like, strip off. Yeah. So yeah, it was really nice to see something deliberately targeted at what can people actually get involved in.
Yeah.
Which is really fantastic. But I think it's fair to say as well, you share a lot elsewhere. So we mentioned, obviously, you've done both IDTX conferences. Yeah. What else have you got coming up kind of over the rest of this year?
Well, I will be making another triumphant return to the UK this fall. So I'll be over at Learning Live in September. I will be at the World of Learning. Who knew? In Birmingham with you and the team. And that's October 11th.
Yes, October 11th.
11th. Yeah. Yeah. And then I'll be heading back to North America to do the rest of the conferences on this side of the pond. But yeah, there's, you never know. There's tons of podcast interviews coming out. I'm always, always in it to win it, to support the communities. And actually, speaking of which, I can actually share this now. For anyone who's listening who is part of the Offbeat community, this was just announced yesterday that we have teamed up together to offer the very first ever Science of Learning and Learning Design workshops through the Offbeat. So first cohort program ever delivered by Learning Pirate with the Offbeat community.
That's fantastic. I think it's. I think we've spoken about it before, but there's so many people in the industry who have amazing pieces of knowledge or areas of expertise that so often just don't get shared.
Yeah.
You know, there are so many complications, challenges, costs in just sharing great information now. So people like yourself going, I think it's fair to say, out of your way somewhat to make sure that information gets shared is so valuable. So thank you for doing all of that.
I thank the scientists. That's who I thank. That's who I do it for.
This is awesome. We need more of this, more communication between those two. I think can only be a positive thing. So we're coming up on the end of this episode. And I always like to kind of finish with like key thoughts or a big takeaway for those in the audience. Because so often we all listen to podcasts and we get to the end and go, oh, well, that was fun. And then we go and, like, I don't know, eat cake. Well, that's my list anyway, as we were discussing before, how much I like cake. But if those listening today were to walk away from this podcast with just one thought, one action, one thing that they should do moving forwards, what would you like to see that be?
Take a breath. And don't just take any breath. Take that really good, intentional breath. Take a big belly breath. Hold it at the top. Take one more when you think you can't breathe anymore, and then let that out. And feel what happens as your brain releases the neurochemistry to tell your body that we are safe, we are calm, and we can make good decisions. Use that executive function.
Like a little take-home experiment. I love it. That's, yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, Lauren, thank you so much for taking the time out to come and speak to us.
I love it. Love it every time, Tom.
obviously looking forward to seeing you in person later this year at World of Learning. Just a reminder to everyone, World of Learning, the seminars are completely free to attend. So it is your opportunity to come and hear from incredible L&D people like Lauren over 2 days in Birmingham, 10th and 11th. So please do come along and say hello and come to some of the sessions. But in the meantime, thank you all for listening, and we will catch you in the next one.
Yeah.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Ideas Podcast. You can find all the information about everything we discussed in this show and links to connect with Lauren in the description. Please leave a comment to let us know what you're taking away from this conversation, and we'll see you next time.